well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Hope you had a great weekend. It was cool. It was rainy. I could do no yard work. I got it all done on Friday afternoon, so I don't feel too bad about that. It was a lovely, relaxing weekend, just the way I like it. Hopefully, you had the same. All right, on today's program, we're going to be talking about a court decision out of New York. Not good news for gun owners, where a federal judge has upheld New York's ammunition background check law. Yeah, the Obama appointee saying that a colonial Virginia law meant to deprive Catholics of keeping and bearing arms is all the historical analogy that is necessary to uphold New York's ammunition background checks. I know, this is crazy. So let's get into this here. In the judge's decision, he writes, as of October of last year, New York State Police processed 29,464 ammunition transactions, of which, he says, 29,037, or 98.6%, were approved. Only 161 were denied. The remaining 231 ammunition transactions were delayed, he writes. That's less than 1% of the total. While further human review was performed to determine whether the prospective purchaser may legally take possession of ammunition. Only 32 people appealed the denial of their background check. 19 of those appeals were ultimately overturned. Of the 11 appeals that were upheld, 8 were for mental health-related issues, 2 were based on state statutory disqualifiers or an extreme risk protection order, and 1 was for a prior felony conviction. All right, so first of all, the judge, again, going off of the numbers that the New York State Police have given him. Look, very, very few delays here, right? 231 out of almost 30,000 background checks have been delayed. Now, that number is going to be disputed. In fact, it is being disputed by gun store owners. But that's the number that the New York State Police is offering. And so the judge in this case said, the court concludes that the ammunition background check requirement is consistent with the well-recognized historical tradition of preventing dangerous individuals from possessing weapons. The judge did find that ammunition is protected by the Second Amendment, which meant that it was up to the state of New York to offer an historical analog showing that these types of restrictions requiring ammo purchasers to go through a background check before they can take possession of ammunition fits with the text, the history, and the tradition of the Second Amendment and how it was exercised. This is where it gets weird. The judge wrote, the government offers several historical examples of laws that were enacted to disarm dangerous individuals, but the court will discuss only one of the many analogs offered. In colonial Virginia, the legislature dictated that no Catholics, quote, shall or may have or keep in his house or elsewhere or in the possession of any other person to his use or at his disposition any arms, weapons, gunpowder, or ammunition because it was determined that it is dangerous at this time to permit Catholics to be armed. Yeah, that's what we're going to hang our hat or maybe our robe on here. A colonial statute from Virginia that said, well, you know, Catholics, and by the way, keep in mind, that was right after the Revolution of 1688 in England, which pitted Catholics and Protestants against one another. Might that statute have been put in place with a desire to punish Catholics or to falsely label them all as dangerous? Mm-hmm. So why would you point to that? Which, by the way, it does not really offer an appropriate analog to the modern ammunition background check laws. Remember, this isn't a law prohibiting dangerous people from possessing ammunition. That's already in place. That's already on the books, right? Now, we can argue again about the definition of dangerous. Does everybody who has a felony conviction, are they considered dangerous? Should they be considered dangerous? What about a misdemeanor that was punishable by more than a year in jail? What about somebody who was adjudicated as mentally defective 30 years ago, but has had no issues since? Again, those are open questions, right? But the law as it stands right now says none of those individuals are entitled to purchase or possess a firearm or ammunition. That's not what the New York law does. Was there anything in the Virginia statute that empowered the state to check on these Catholics who might have been exercising their right to keep and bear arms? Did the law empower state officials to go, or colonial officials to go into Catholics' homes to look for arms or ammunition? Doesn't sound like it. It was simply a prohibition which, by the way, exists already. That's the analog. The appropriate historical analog to the Virginia statute in question is the modern prohibition on prohibited persons possessing arms or ammunition. That's it. But the judge, well, the judge took a different point of view because the judge wants to uphold these ammunition background checks. The judge also wrote, the plaintiffs attempt to argue that the background check system causes unconstitutional delays in practice because of system malfunctions. However, he writes, the record before this court and the allegations of the plaintiff's complaint do not support a finding that the plaintiffs are likely to succeed in showing that the ammunition background checks are so lengthy in practice that citizens are being denied the right to bear arms. On the one hand, plaintiffs offer declarations from 10 other members of the New York State Firearms Association who have encountered some kind of delay due to an alleged malfunction of the background check system. Together, these declarations allege that the background check system was unavailable at certain periods of time at specific locations on September 19th, September 28th, October 10th, October 14th, October 20th, October 24th, and October 25th. Because of the system's unavailability, these declarants allege that they were not able to complete their purchases. On the other hand, the judge writes, the government has proffered a declaration which affirms that as of October 9th of last year, the New York State Police processed 29,464 instantaneous ammunition background checks. Even if those 10 members of the New York State Firearms Association experienced a lengthy wait time at the time of their individual purchases, the judge wrote, those 10 experiences are simply not enough to outweigh the tens of thousands of other background checks that the government says it has performed without incident. Accordingly, the court finds that the plaintiffs are not likely to succeed on the merits of an as-applied challenge of the background check system either. To which I say, why are we taking the state at face value here? First of all, what does the state define as instantaneous? Is it truly an instant check? What if there's a delay of 10 or 15 minutes? That still count as instantaneous? What if it's a couple of hours? What if that check is completed the same business day as opposed to waiting several days? Because what the state is alleging is very, very different than what we're hearing from gun store owners across the state. For example, the owner of On Target Firearms in Webster, New York, told a local news outlet, let me make sure that I get the name of the news outlet in question here, WHAM in Rochester. He said, quote, the biggest problem with the system is there are more delays than anything. 80% or more of the answers we get are delays, which means the state needs more time. A customer comes in wanting to purchase ammo because they want to enjoy their sport, and then I can't transfer the ammo to them. So delays take anywhere from a few minutes to a few days, and customers don't want to wait. The business would lose out on the sale of the ammunition as well as the sale of anything else in the store relating to renting a lane for shooting purposes. We've lost out on thousands of dollars since this happened in 2023. Now again, the state of New York says these delays are happening less than 1% of the time. This gun store owner says he's seen delays about 80% of the time. There's a huge gulf between those two figures. And he's not the only gun store owner who is experiencing these types of delays. Now, it is also important to note that several gun store owners say not only are they seeing delays when people are trying to buy ammunition, but they're also seeing fewer customers altogether. Chris Martello of Icon Arms in Chile, New York, says most people are traveling out of state to Pennsylvania to buy ammunition. They're not even bothering with us. The ones that do make it, the ones that do make it worth their while. So they'll buy a ton, maybe 250 to 1,000 rounds, and have it shipped in for a one-time transfer fee. And then you won't see them again for a while because they just have so much ammunition. Now, again, that's a separate issue. The number of New Yorkers who are bypassing the background check process by going to another state, which, by the way, prohibited persons can do too, right? They can go to a state that doesn't require background checks for ammunition sales, and they can acquire their ammunition that way. They can also acquire their ammunition on the black market. They can get it through theft. They can get it through family members or friends. But this does seem to be a far bigger issue than what the state of New York is copping to. And again, I'm very curious as to how the New York State Police defines an instant check. In the decision, the judge indicated that maybe the New York State Police only views these delays as delays when it requires human intervention to go back and double check. But if the check itself doesn't take place right away, or if the background check takes a few hours in coming back, but again, no human intervention is required at this point, that would still seem to be, according to the state of New York, an instant check, even though the customer might be long gone by the time the check is actually completed. Now, with the judge's decision, this case is technically dismissed. The judge's decision could be appealed up to the Second Circuit, and I hope that that happens here. Listen, I'm not an attorney. I don't generally give legal advice, but I would advise the New York State Firearms Association, if they are going to appeal this case, you probably need to broaden, if not the scope of your plaintiffs, at least look for more declarations from gun store owners who can rebut the state's position that 98.6% of these checks are coming back in an instantaneous fashion, because that doesn't appear to be the case. You know, we've seen stories about the delays and the false denials that have been plaguing New York's ammo background check system since the system went into effect last September. It doesn't appear as if it's gotten any better. The New York State Police did admit at the beginning, yeah, it's going to take some time. You know, we're working through all the challenges here. It's a new system. Give us a little bit of, you know, patience. But it really doesn't appear as if things have gotten any better in the months since. It also appears that you've got a judge going out of their way to uphold this New York State law. Again, I'm not saying that this case is over and done with, but it does appear to me that any litigation is going to need to broaden the scope of the evidence that's presented here beyond these specific plaintiffs, to include the testimony of gun store owners and maybe other gun owners across the state of New York that can really help highlight the scope of the problem in New York State right now. All right. We will keep our eyes on this litigation, and hopefully we do see an appeal here up to the Second Circuit. Before we get to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for a second. At the very heart of our democracy lies a principle that we hold sacred. Free speech. It's the cornerstone that supports every freedom we cherish. Yet in today's digital age, discussions about our wealth, our rights, and our future are being silenced or overshadowed in mainstream narratives, leaving many feeling voiceless in conversations that are crucial to our financial independence and security. That's where Wealth Protection Research steps in, armed with a mission that's never been more critical. Wealth Protection Research is not a financial advisory firm. They're defenders of free speech, committed to giving a voice to the silenced. Wealth Protection Research tirelessly seeks out financial experts. These are the voices that challenge prevailing narratives, especially as we navigate the uncertainties of the 2024 election. Wealth Protection Research has created a 2024 Election Wealth Protection Report. This free report highlights the three best ideas for protecting and growing your money heading into the 2024 election. It contains ideas the mainstream media won't touch, and listeners can get it completely free when you text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. If you believe in the sanctity of free speech and the importance of financial freedom, then act now. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy of this 2024 Election Protection Report. It's time to widen the scope of what we're told, to hear the ideas the establishment doesn't think you can handle, and to take control of our financial destinies. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Chicago, the website CWB Chicago reporting on the woman from Rogers Park, accused of robbing two stores at gunpoint while on electronic monitoring. That's right. I tell you, I could have a recidivist report from Chicago each and every day, but I try to spread the wealth around a little bit. So it was back in January that Joanna Richardson had an ankle monitor put on her after she allegedly fled from Chicago police officers in a stolen vehicle. Cops caught up to her. She apparently resisted police, tried to remove one of the officer's guns from its holster, charged with kicking that officer, biting another officer on the forearm. Police also found suspected crack cocaine, powder cocaine, and suspected heroin in her purse, along with a passport, credit cards, and other items that belonged to somebody else. She was charged with a litany of crimes, but again, placed on an ankle monitor and released on her own recognizance. And then 3 months after she had that GPS device placed on her ankle, Richardson was accused of robbing two stores in about an hour. According to prosecutors, surveillance video shows her taking a bottle of Pepsi to the counter at a BP gas station and then pulling out a gun to demand money. The cashier did not give her any of the cash register's contents, but she allegedly took the soda. About an hour later, she's accused of pulling a gun out of a Family Dollar shopping bag and going behind the counter at a Shell station. Chicago cops recognized Richardson from the video footage of the two robberies, according to CWB Chicago. Knowing that she had a GPS monitor, they reached out to the sheriff's office. They learned that the ankle monitor was still attached, believe it or not. Can't believe she didn't just cut it off. And that the GPS data indicated that she was, in fact, at both stores at the time of the stickups. Police used those GPS readings to locate her current whereabouts, tracked her down, saw her get out of a Jeep and walk into a convenience store. When they tried to detain her, she allegedly lunged forward and bit another officer's forearm. That seems to be a habit. Once she was in custody, police searched her, her vehicle, allegedly recovered a loaded handgun from inside a Family Dollar shopping bag. They also found suspected methamphetamine in the car, as well as a baggie of cocaine in her possession, along with some cash. Now she's facing even more charges, including two counts of armed robbery with a firearm, unlawful use of a weapon by a felon, attempted aggravated robbery with her, aggravated battery of a peace officer, attempted armed robbery with a firearm, two counts of armed habitual criminal, and she was ordered, believe it or not, to be detained as a public safety risk at the state's request. We'll see how long that lasts before she is released, maybe with a second ankle monitor, just so they could be extra safe and secure about knowing where she is. Today's armed citizen story from Cleveland, Ohio, where an Amazon delivery driver, I hate this headline, but I singled it out for a reason. This is from WHIO in Dayton, accused of shooting and killing a suspected armed carjacker. I don't think he's accused of it. I'm pretty sure that he's acknowledged, but he says he did so in self-defense. This was Sunday afternoon about 4 p.m. on the west side of Cleveland. Apparently, this armed carjacker, who's yet to be identified by police, approached the Amazon delivery driver, demanded his belongings. At one point, the delivery driver pulled out a gun of his own, fired a shot. The armed carjacker still managed to get behind the wheel of the delivery driver's vehicle and take off, but he crashed a short distance away and was pronounced dead at the scene. Again, I've seen no indication from police that this is anything other than a justified use of force, and that this was an act of self-defense on the part of the delivery driver. So I'm not sure why WHIO threw in the word accused there when he's not been charged with a crime, and I highly doubt that he will be. But we'll keep our eyes open for any more details on this story. I wrote about this at Bearing Arms earlier today. It is entirely possible that this guy is going to lose his job for protecting his life while on the clock. I hope that that is not the case, but we have seen this happen before. And it is likely to happen here as well, unfortunately. All right, today's good deed of the day. In the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. An off-duty firefighter from Brooklyn, New York, who saved a man from a burning car over the weekend. It was early Saturday morning when the off-duty firefighter, Lieutenant Rich Cannon, was driving, approaching the Bay Parkway exit on a Brooklyn highway, noticed some dust, and then realized that two cars had been in an accident. One of the cars was actually on fire. He said, as first responders, it's ingrained into you that you help on or off duty, whether it was another off-duty firefighter, EMT, paramedic, or police officer. I'm sure they all would have done the same thing to help this person's life. Well, in this case, it was Lieutenant Gannon. He ran up to the car that was in flames, tried to get the driver out, noticed couldn't get the driver's side door open, so he had to go around to the passenger side. Thankfully, he was able to open that door under the seatbelt, extricate the passenger there. Again, while flames are already licking at the underside of the car, which was eventually fully engulfed, thankfully not until after Lieutenant Gannon had rescued that individual from the flames and the wreckage. Looks like the victim is going to be okay. Lieutenant Gannon continued on his way again in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to save somebody in need. And for that, we thank him for his very, very good deed. All right. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow as we discuss more of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. But don't forget to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest 2A stories from coast to coast. If you like what you see, I'd also encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member. All you have to do, go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code SAVEAMERICA, all one word, and you can get 50% off your VIP or VIP Gold membership. It's our way of saying thanks for showing your support, because it really does make a difference, and it truly does matter in this day and age of big tech censorship. So, truly, thank you again for supporting our mission here at Bearing Arms. We'll see you back here tomorrow for 2A Tuesday. Until then, be safe, be well, and be free.